U.S. crude dropped 4% to a low of $47.84 a barrel, then pared some of that decline. Sparking the fall, rising inventories and forecasts of record production by the U.S. and Russia. The global stock sell-off added to the downdraft.
Shares for SoftBank's mobile unit slumped more than 10% on debut, an unusually poor start in the Japanese market. That makes it only the second to flop among major IPOs there in recent years.
Elon Musk is using rocket technology to build tunnels, and he hopes this test site here in Los Angeles paves the way for a much bigger transit system all across the country.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. This is The Opening Bell. I'm Bennett Wakenight, stepping in for Steve Grzanich this morning. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate you starting your morning off with us here. We've got a great show coming up. First, touching on internet dark spots across rural America, Dr. Wally Tyner from Purdue University is going to discuss with us a little bit about what he's doing to help with that situation. Then a little bit after the 5:30 news, we shift over to the medical realm and look at the simple product that could greatly impact the lifestyle of those living with diabetes with Mark Hans and Reyes Witt from Dropkit, a product designed and created here in Chicago. But first, on the Associated Bank Market Desk, we'll start with a little bit of the overnight numbers, some numbers that we've been watching overnight and kicking off today. The Dow futures looking up on a positive day, up 191 points. S&P futures up 20 points. NASDAQ futures up 55 points, looking like a good day on the markets today in the U.S. In Europe, the DAX up just nearly 0.5%. FTSE up 0.69%. And the CAC as well up just 0.4%. And Asia, not as well as a good day as they would have hoped. Nikkei down a blistering 127 points, correction that is, nearly 0.6%. Shanghai down as well, 1%. And the Hang Seng just up 0.2% on the day as they continue trading there. Some stories that we've been looking at over the overnight and keeping up and starting your day off. U.S. stock futures indicated a higher start for Wall Street when the markets open later today, with fresh trade deal optimism hoping to lift sentiment, but more so as investors await the outcome as a key policy announcement from the Federal Reserve, as you heard there in the news. The Federal Open Market Committee will conclude their two-day meeting later on today and announce a decision on whether to raise interest rates at 1 p.m. Chicago time. Shares of SoftBank Corporation, Japan's biggest ever IPO, and one of the world's largest, fell more than 14% on its market debut, opening 6.4% lower. The company is the mobile unit of billionaire Masayoshi Son's SoftBank Group holding company, which includes U.S. telecoms company Sprint. The group also holds significant stakes in Yahoo Japan and Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba. Soft Group Corp. raised 2.65 trillion yen, that comes out to roughly $23.5 billion, after pricing the offering at 1,500 yen a share, and increased the amount of stock sold by 160 million shares in response to strong demand, according to Reuters. That makes it Japan's biggest IPO and just below Alibaba's record of $25 billion listing on Wall Street in 2014. And single-family housing starts fell more than 13% last month from a year earlier, according to the U.S. Census that came out yesterday. Building permits, an indicator of future construction, were down nearly 2% this following sharp drop in home builder sentiment to the lowest level in more than 3 years. According to the National Association of Home Builders, real estate experts point to higher mortgage rates along with the surge in home prices over the last few years as the culprit. Mortgage rates are a full percentage point higher now than they were a year ago. So as I said, starting off the first conversation, the internet these days is second nature to a lot of us, since it's usually everywhere we go, in our homes, our work, and even in stores when we go shopping, for the most part. We're joined now by Wally Tyner, the James and Lois Ackerman Professor of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University, and we're discussing what's being done to help a large portion of Midwesterners who go without broadband internet on a daily basis. So, Wally, good morning. Welcome. Thanks so much for taking the time with us on The Opening Bell.
Glad to be with you.
So let's start off by setting the scene with this report, and if you could explain the issue at hand and who exactly this is impacting.
Well, it, impacts everybody in rural areas where they don't have, either have no internet or really poor quality, very slow speed internet, kind of like the old dial-up stuff. And today, as you said, we use internet for everything. And the potential use in the future goes far beyond where we are today. In the future, we'll be getting a lot of our medical care, starting at least with internet contact with doctors. We'll be doing tests at home and sending them in by internet. Teachers will be interacting with their students via internet. Students will be doing homework on the computer. In fact, one time I was talking to a group of legislators about it, and he said, "Oh, well, this is going to end snow days." And in fact, it would, because the teachers will have internet at home, the students will have internet at home, and they can go on almost like as usual. Today, a huge, what's called a digital divide. The people who have it have got access to all these things. You can find new jobs. You can shop. You can buy a car if you want on the internet. And if you don't have internet, you have none of that. You don't have educational opportunities. Farmers who don't have internet can't get good price information. They can't get good technical information. What kind of weed is this, and how should I treat it? And it just goes on and on and on, Bennett. We estimated that getting rural broadband to rural areas has a benefit-cost ratio of 4-1, meaning that $4, you put in $1 of investment and you get $4 back to the rural economy. Now, I do a lot of benefit-cost studies, but it's very rare that I see something with a benefit-cost ratio of 4-1.
Sure.
So clearly it's something that needs to be done. The problem is that the co-ops who work in those areas wouldn't get a lot of that revenue. It goes to the general economy. So it won't happen unless there is help with the investment. And the investment is huge. I'll give you an example. In my neighborhood, the distance between houses, and they're called drops, is, say, 20 feet, 25 feet. In rural areas, the distance between houses, 25 miles. And it cost a lot of money to get that fiber. We're talking about running fiber optic to every house in rural America. And that cost a lot of money. But we did something similar to this in 1936. In 1936, 10% or less of rural America had electricity. And Congress passed the Rural Electrification Act. And by 1939, just 3 years later, 50% had electricity. And this technology is just as important today as electricity was in 1936.
Right.
So if Congress did pass in the new farm bill increased monies to provide rural broadband to rural areas, not enough to get the job done, but it's a start. Indiana allocated $100 million this year for increased rural broadband access. There's just so many things in today's life that and more in tomorrow's life that rural broadband will be necessary for, that we just can't allow rural citizens to be on the dark side of the rural divide.
Sure. And I think the biggest driver home for listeners and everybody to understand who overlooks this aspect of our life is comparing it to the basic necessity of electricity. This is essentially our version of changing the accessibility of electricity from back in the 1930s to internet to people these days. So, and of course, you touched on the economic impact that that this will have, and we'll dive into that in a bit. But is this more of an infrastructure problem or a lack of representation from internet providers, or is this a larger issue at hand that we're talking about?
It's the capital cost to get it laid. It's really expensive to get all that fiber over the broad area, because in urban areas, the household density is very high. You know, here's a house, you know, bang, 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 right next to each other. In rural areas, they're miles apart, and it just cost a lot of money to put up the poles and string the wire to get to reach all those houses. But once it's there, it pays for itself. The revenue that the co-op would get would be plenty to keep the system going. So it's really an upfront infrastructure cost.
Sure.
That's the big block. And the co-ops say that if we can get assistance of one form or another of about 20% of the total cost, we can make the rest happen. So, you know, they're not asking that somebody pay the whole bill. They're asking to help with that upfront cost.
Sure.
And the way it was done when through electrification is the government provided the co-ops low interest loans for that upfront cost, and it worked.
Yeah.
So something like that could make it work today.
We're talking with Dr. Wally Tyner, the James and Lois Ackerman Professor of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University. Wally, sit tight with us. We're going to be right back and chat a little bit more on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. A couple of stocks of local interest we're keeping our eyes on. We're looking at Groupon, closed up 2.32%, only at $3.39 per share. Grubhub closing just over even at 75.95 a share, and WW Grainger down nearly 0.5% at 282.86 a share. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A turbulent session ended with stocks closing mostly higher on Tuesday as key benchmarks tried to break away from their lowest levels since the fall of 2017. The Dow advanced 83 points to 23,678. The Nasdaq Composite picked up 30 points. The S&P 500 was unchanged. Despite opposition from President Trump, the Federal Reserve today is expected to boost interest rates for the fourth time this year. Facebook is pushing back against a New York Times report that says the social media platform has given its users' personal data to Microsoft, Netflix, and Spotify. The Times says Facebook allowed Microsoft's Bing search engine to see the names of virtually all Facebook users' friends without their consent. A vice president of Bell Helicopter has been indicted on charges of conspiring with the owner of a Puerto Rican company to inflate the price of aircraft that Bell was selling to the government in San Juan. Javier Ortiz Torres is vice president of Bell's Latin America commercial business. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. I'm Bennett Wakenight, in for Steve Grzanich today. We're talking with Dr. Wally Tyner of Purdue University about internet dark spots in Indiana in particular. And Wally, so we mentioned a little bit of the economic impact, the significant economic impact that this has to Indiana in particular. Obviously, with agriculture industry coming first to mind, what are some of the other industries in the region that are being held back by this lack of internet access?
Well, just about anybody that's without it is held back. But the some of the categories, we talked about K-12 education, and we estimated productivity gains, fairly small in our estimates, but I think they would be larger than what we used, but 5% productivity gain yields benefits of better than $1 million a year just in one service territory. And then there is adult education. This would permit adult learners to enhance their job skills, to move to new jobs, to get more skills for their current job, higher wages. Something like Purdue Global that's available everywhere you have internet is only available to those people who have broadband internet. And that means that adults could continue their education, get better jobs, higher paying jobs. Consumers save quite a bit. You know how many people, how many of us buy things on the internet, but we do a lot of our shopping on the internet, and that's not shopping just for toys and books and games. It's shopping for insurance. It's shopping for cars. It's shopping for mortgages. It's shopping for all, our estimate was that the average household would save $700 a year just in shopping. Cost reductions by using having access to the internet. So it just goes on and on. Healthcare, tremendous savings, and the healthcare savings are savings not just for the individuals, but savings for Medicare and Medicaid. So the federal Medicare budgets and the state Medicaid and federal Medicaid budgets would be reduced because the health expenses that are paid for by those programs, the cost would go down. And those programs pay about a quarter of total health care cost. So it's just about everywhere you think. And one of the things about a disruptive technology like rural broadband, and we recognize this right up front, is the very nature of a disruptive technology is that you cannot envision all of the benefits that are going to occur, because it's just going to, things are going to open up, new things are going to happen that we just can't envision now. So it is a very important technology to have access to all American citizens. It's just like a phone or a driver's license or something like that that we take for granted. Access to broadband should be in that same category.
Absolutely. It's an eye-opening report that I think everyone is a little bit more aware of now that they think of it in a different light, and it's something we all take for granted, that's for sure. We're a little crunched on time. Dr. Wally Tyner, the James and Lois Ackerman Professor of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University. Dr. Tyner, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bennett.
All right, we are here on 720 WGN. This is the opening bell on WGN.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. WeWork is opening a new space at 222 South Riverside Plaza next to Union Station in the West Loop. The latest office is WeWork's 9th Chicago location and will occupy 60,000 square feet on the 15th and 16th floors of the building, with room for more than 1,100 desks. Chicago startup Uptake is being sued by GE over what GE called a ruthless scheme to poach employees and obtain trade secrets. The lawsuit filed Monday alleges that Uptake began poaching GE employees in 2017 following talks between the two companies over a possible business transaction. And several Chicago leaders are headed to Los Angeles to see the progress being made on the high-speed transportation tunnel from Elon Musk's Boring Company. Musk was selected in June to build a high-speed underground transit system from downtown Chicago to O'Hare. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell. I'm Bennett Wakenight, in for Steve Grzanich today. The latest report from the CDC shows that over 30 million Americans are living with diabetes. That's nearly 10% of the population. It's a serious disease, but it can usually be managed through an active lifestyle, proper diet, and the appropriate use of insulin. But this lifestyle management is one of the keys for Mark Hans and Reyes Witt, co-founders of Dropkit, a product to ease the stress of diabetic management. And they join me now, Mark and Reyes. Good morning, and welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. So let's start off a little bit on the brief history of this. So, Mark, start off with explaining what exactly Dropkit is and why it was created.
Thank you. Yeah, Dropkit, we make premium diabetic goods. So our signature item is our premium Dropkit. It is a stylish, compact way for diabetics, both type 1 and type 2, to carry their daily essential diabetic supplies with them wherever they go in style. It really started, I've been type 1 diabetic since for almost 30 years now, and I've carried my diabetic goods with me and everything from a Ziploc bag to an old toiletry kit and everything in between. And it just never had a solution that I can go to a board meeting, I could go to a dinner date or an event and feel confident carrying my stuff with me in a small, compact way. And so last summer I was at a farmer's market. Reyes and I met at a farmer's market. We bumped into each other, and a few months later, Dropkit was born.
There you go. And that's, go ahead, Reyes.
So I'm a product designer, and I've spent the last 20 years designing leather goods. And so I used to work at Coach and Ralph Lauren, and have spent time as a product engineer. When I met Mark and he started talking to me about the needs of diabetics, one of the things that just rang a bell to me was, this is a great idea. He said to me, if there's anything that you could ever do for diabetics, I would love a kit. And he said, you know, I knew Mark's background was in marketing, and I called him up and said, let's get this going. I actually think there's a need for this. And we started working on this a year ago together, and we spent about 6 months working on the kit itself, which is the longest I've ever spent working on any product design, especially for something so small, but every single detail of this kit needed to function and work properly.
Sure.
So we feel really great and confident about the product itself.
Yeah, and sometimes it just takes that one little meeting and that one spark of an idea, and next thing you know, you got a product. So, Mark, just for context, for those of us who don't live with diabetes or know somebody who does, speak to the importance of that lifestyle management that those of us who are unaware of might, you know, the importance of all that.
Yeah, definitely. As you said earlier, diabetes affects millions of Americans every year. Obviously, there's two types of diabetes, type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is an autoimmune disease. It doesn't matter what your lifestyle is. If it's in your DNA, you get it. Type 2 diabetes typically can be managed with a different lifestyle, so diet, exercise, etc. Whether you're type 1 or type 2 diabetic, there are just certain things that we should all be doing to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Some of that, obviously, is diet, exercise, but when it comes to the actual management of your diabetes, there are just certain essential supplies that every diabetic should have with them and should be carrying with them wherever they go. And so those are things like a glucose testing meter or a glucometer to check your blood sugar. If you're a type 1 diabetic, you'll need insulin. Sometimes that comes in the form of an insulin pen where you can take injections each day. Some people still use vials of insulin and syringes. And then on the technology side, we have lots of diabetics that have begun using insulin pumps and what we call continuous glucose monitors. These are wireless Bluetooth devices to attach to your skin that will monitor your sugar and send a reading instantly to your Apple iWatch or another Bluetooth device like your phone. It's just, again, being a diabetic, having these things with you within an arm's distance at all times, it's just essential. We also need to carry little sugar tablets or candy with us in case our sugars plummet. And that was one of the things Reyes did an amazing job in designing, was making sure that the kit has an explicit spot to carry kind of the industry standard glucose tablets. So if you ever get an emergency, everything you need is right there in your drop kit.
Right. And I'm looking online at dropkit.com, your guys' website, and these products, they are indeed very stylish, and they look so discreet compared to what you described as, you know, putting your tools and devices in a Ziploc bag beforehand. Really, it looks like a notebook that anybody would be carrying around an office or downtown walking around, or a kid in a school. So it is really well designed in that regard. So, but in addition to that, there's also a big community aspect to this product, as seen on your guys' Instagram presence and the Facebook presence. Explain a little bit of the importance of that community side to the product as well as that lifestyle.
Yeah, definitely. The diabetic community is honestly one of the most genuine, supportive communities out there. I think the rise of social media has really just been such a benefit to hundreds of thousands of diabetics. Again, there's almost 200,000 diabetic youth less than 20 years old in the U.S. today. Social media and the diabetic community support each other. You see everything from people posting their highs and their lows, no pun intended, but really also helping each other out, whether it's, what do you do when you go to an exercise class and your blood sugar is high? Do you take insulin? Do you not? And so people are not only giving each other advice and support, they're also kind of dispelling the myth and the stigma of the disease. I think diabetes, obviously, from an outside perspective, there might be a stigma attached to it. What you see when you go on our social media and our Instagram page, which is just Drop Kit with two P's and two T's, you'll see that we have young people, old people, men, women, mothers, fathers, everybody is impacted by this disease. We have customers that are buying them as gifts for their fathers. We have customers that are buying them as gifts for their teenage daughters that are on the high school soccer team. And so the community really gives life to the effort. I think some of the best wins, I think, for us and the proudest moments of our small startup is getting emails and direct messages of people saying, I've been searching for something like this, and I finally have it. Just being able to provide that support to the diabetic community. And again, as a type 1 diabetic, I've waited almost 30 years for this product, and I'm so happy that it's here and we can provide that value to the community.
Right. And that support that comes with any product these days, whether it's an old redesigned product or a brand new one off the line, that's that community aspect and that interactive aspect is what a lot of consumers look
for.
Right. So
we do Instagram Lives each Thursday at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, where we bring on a different diabetic influencer, and you would be amazed at the people that tune in, the people that are asking questions. This Thursday, we have a gentleman out in Dallas, Texas. He's a stand-up comedian, and he's like a social media influencer who's all based around being type 1 diabetic. So we're bringing people together literally from all over the globe. We had somebody in Peru, Brazil, Ireland, all reaching out wanting to get Dropkits.
Gotcha. So, Ray, is shifting a little bit to the business side of this entire venture, you've got a very diverse business background as well. What has it been like working and collaborating with the Chicago business community on this project?
Oh, it's actually really refreshing. My background is very much in mass production, doing runs for Costco, doing, you know, big box retailers. This is so different because this is really about the value of the product and not so much necessarily about the dollars and cents out at the gate, right? So our importance first is to make sure that we have a solid product to serve diabetics better. So starting that at the beginning of a product development and a product venture is really sort of flipping the script on everything that I've done in the past. I've done stylish products and accessories for mass markets. So it is very different. It's interesting. When you start small, the community really is everything about building up, people supporting you, coming in from all different ventures. We've had so much support with this small startup, people reaching out to us from the JDRF and asking us to help out as well with, we just recently did the gala where we donated a few kits. It's so tied in with the community. Very different.
Sure. On all levels of that aspect, from the business to the product side, there's that community that comes back again. So, well, it seems like you guys have got a good ground beneath you. How do you guys see this growing as you both move forward with Dropkit?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So as a small bootstrap startup out of Chicago, I think the things that we're really looking to grow is, number one, looking how we can get these in the hands of as many diabetics as we can so that we can inform our product development and look for a second stage of product. We're looking also to grow with large partnerships with other diabetic companies and just trying to build that community. One of the big things that we're looking at right now is preliminary. We're selling online. So we're just looking for people local in the Chicago area that might be willing to host pop-up shops and things of that nature where we can, again, bring together the community. I think one thing Ray has really touched on was our North Star as a company, like our bare bones at the end of the day, the number one thing we believe is that diabetics deserve better solutions, better quality, and better style. And so anytime that we can make a decision that results in diabetics getting something better, that's our effort to grow. So right now, we're big lean startup fans, and that's our methodology for our business development. So we're always learning each day. So right now, the stage the company is in is learning how we can get these in the hands of diabetics as quickly as possible so we can learn as much about what their needs are and how we can provide better solutions for them.
Well, Mark Reyes, thank you so much for joining us on the program this morning, and good luck to you and the entire community of Dropkits as you guys continue to grow.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us on. Obviously, you can check out our website, which is dropkit.com with two P's and two T's. And we're very active on social media, on Instagram, again, just at Dropkit. It's a take on the old school Dropkit, like a toiletry kit, but it's like the drop of a blood.
Perfect. There it is. Mark Hans and Reyes Witt, co-founders of Dropkit at dropkit.com. Two P's and two T's, you heard right there.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Another positive day looking like on the markets. Dow futures up 174 points, S&P futures up 18, nearly 19 points, and the Nasdaq futures up 50 points even. Now, let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities with Orion Samuelson.
Good morning. Soybeans moved slightly higher yesterday, up 2 cents in both the January and the March contracts. Another report of Chinese importers buying an unknown quantity of U.S. soybeans on the first major purchase since booking more than 1.5 million tons last week. And traders are anticipating that we'll get confirmation and the amount of the sales from the U.S. to Department of Agriculture tomorrow or today, perhaps. Turning to the wheat market, down 3 cents a bushel. Corn market, up 1.25 cents a bushel. And a big mover in the market today was the price of oil. Since agriculture uses a great deal of fuel in producing food, oil prices yesterday down more than 5%, falling for the third straight session as the market grappled with reports that U.S. supply would continue to surge even if demand weakens. U.S. crude fell $3.64 a barrel. That's 7.3%, ending the day at $46.24 a barrel. And then turning to the livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, mixed market there with the April lean hog contract up down $1.12 a hundredweight, December live cattle up 57 cents a hundredweight, and January feeder cattle up 85 cents a hundredweight. Visit with Secretary Sonny Perdue went well in Washington, and we'll be sharing that with you on upcoming WGN programming. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, December 19th, the Federal Open Market Committee wraps up their two-day meeting and will announce their decision on adding one more interest rate or not before we kick off 2019. The Mortgage Bankers Association shares weekly mortgage applications. The National Association of Realtors reports on existing home sales, with the EIA Petroleum Status Report out today as well. Earnings, we'll be looking at a number of companies that are scheduled today, so we'll keep our eyes out for General Mills, Pier 1 Imports, Rite Aid Corporation, Herman Miller, and Winnebago Industries. Just some of the things that could move the markets on Wednesday, December 19th, 2018. That's the opening bell. I'm Bennett Wakenight, stepping in for Steve Grzanich today, and I'll be in tomorrow as well. Big thank you to Kasara Henning for producing the program, as well as Bob Ferguson.